Leanne, first of all, welcome to Nepal and welcome to SAPSCast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
How is your stay in Nepal going on?
My stay in Nepal has been absolutely incredible. I've been here for about 10 days. I've traveled all over Kathmandu and also to a couple of different places across the country. And I've met with students and college students and teachers and educators and entrepreneurs and makers and awesome women like you. And just had an incredible experience of this really wonderful culture and people. And it's been really great.
What kind of impressions you had about Nepal and what did you find in reality?
I was already involved with an organization called Nepal Communitaire because I became involved with Nepal Communitaire after the earthquake to help support maker culture and entrepreneurship through maker culture. But what I found, I think, being here was an incredibly kind and positive people and already established creative maker spirit. You know, we went to Patan, Baidoa, met with different makers there, people who were making pottery and woodworking and sculpture. I also saw just an innovative spirit. Overall, very inspired and very, very welcomed and very happy to be here.
When you go back home, would you recommend your friends, your family to come here?
Oh, I want everyone to come to Nepal.
Why is that so?
First of all, it's a wonderful, wonderful place to be. I'm personally very invested in Kathmandu. You have an incredible resource center called Nepal Communitaire. And it's a new model. It's a resource center and a maker space where makers and entrepreneurs and students can come to get access to new tools and new resources. Tell everyone to come to visit Kathmandu and to visit Communitaire and also just to see the culture and the people.
Do you like trekking? Do you have any plans?
So I would love to trek. Unfortunately, because I've been on just such a tight schedule here with all these speaking engagements with the U.S. Embassy and the State Department, which is why I came to do a speaking tour with the U.S. Embassy and the State Department. I wasn't able to do any trekking. So next time I come back to see Communitaire, I will most certainly schedule in an opportunity to do some trekking. I did go to Lumbini and I was at the birthplace of the Buddha and I cried. I have to say I cried. It was very emotional to be in that spot with so much energy and just you could feel it. And we did a small meditation under the Bodhi tree outside of the birthplace, and then we went to some of the temples and met with the Thai monks and had lunch with the monks, and that was an incredible, incredible experience.
Let's talk about your Nepal trip. How did this happen, the whole plan?
I told you, I've been involved with Communitaire, which is this resource center, and they're hosting what's called a maker fair in Kathmandu in September. September 24th and 25th is the Kathmandu Maker Fair. And this is a place where makers come who have created projects, created products, and creations can come to showcase the things that they've made.
Makers, as in, would you please elaborate? If my listener is a maker, how can he or she know I should be there too in the fair?
Ah, that's a great question. So some examples of makers are from students, for example, who have made paper flowers. Or we have one student who's made a glass house because his father taught him to make glass houses. So that they're makers. The Robotics Association of Nepal and people who make robots or who make drones, those are makers. There's someone who has figured out how to make an air conditioner out of plastic bottles using no electricity. That's a maker. So a maker is really anyone who has created something, who has made something using either technology like a laser cutter or a soldering iron or materials like clay, or even making what I call treasure out of trash. So you take materials from your environment and you recreate them to create something new. Maybe you use the wrappers from old chip bags and you've used them to make purses. People do that. So really a maker is anyone. Do you take things apart and put them back together? Have you created something? Have you thought of a problem that you would like to solve and made a solution to it? Or do you have a new product or invention created or an idea that you want to create that you want to showcase? All of those kind of people can come to the Nepal Maker Fair, the Kathmandu Maker Fair at Communitaire, show what they've created, or If you're just curious and interested and you want to see what other people have made, you want to see entrepreneurs and makers from all across Nepal and see what they're doing, you can come and see what they're doing. Or there will also be activities there where you can have little mini experiences, interactive experiences where you can learn more about maker culture, about different kinds of technologies and tools, and get hands-on experience to try new things for yourself. So it will be a very fun, very exciting event with lots of people, lots of energy, lots of inspiration, lots of creativity.
So you should book your date. That's September?
Yes, 24th and 25th in Kathmandu. Google Nepal Communitaire, and also I know Nepal Communitaire is on Facebook. You can also check out the U.S. Embassy, who I think will be tweeting.
So you're telling us about the whole trip. How did this happen?
The U.S. Embassy in Nepal was working with Communitaire to help to support the work that they were doing with the Maker Faire. And the U.S. Embassy also has American spaces that are all across Nepal. And one of their American spaces is in Kathmandu.
Would you like to elaborate more on what is American Spaces?
Yes. So in Kathmandu, the American space is called the iHub. It is a center right now. It's a library and a resource center where there are lots of books that you can check out. There is a mini maker space where they have a 3D printer and a laser cutter and soldering iron. And it's really a place where you can convene. You can access new resources. You can go to events and hear panels. So it's really a space for people to come and to experience, you know, making, to work, to have events. It's a great space. I highly recommend you checking it out. It's called the iHub. And the American Embassy also has a number of spaces across Nepal. They have something called the Book Bus that travels around the country. It has a number of different books. In each different location, I believe there are 9 total American spaces, and at each one of those locations, they have different kinds of resources, tools, books, and programming. They're the ones who invited me, the U.S. Embassy invited me to come to Nepal and to have a speaking tour, to talk to people about maker spaces and maker culture and STEM education and women in technology and local manufacturing and the mini maker faire, all and maker faire in Kathmandu, all of these things. And so that's what I've been doing here, is just traveling around the country and talking also about 3D printing, which is my area of expertise, which is part of this, you know, maker culture, maker to manufacturer culture.
I was watching videos of yours. I watched 2 videos. You are very bold, very smart, from maker to a change maker.
Yes.
So I remember one sentence of yours: imagine a world where you can make anything. And now with the help of 3D scan, 3D software, and 3D print, it's almost possible. Is it? Like, really? Was my question.
The reason why that is because with 3D printing, take a step back. There are 3 kinds of manufacturing, okay? There's formative manufacturing, which looks like clay. You form clay. You mold clay. There's subtractive manufacturing, which looks like stone carving or wood carving, where you have a solid material and you chip away and you're subtracting material to make some. And then there's additive manufacturing, which is 3D printing, where you're creating something layer by layer by layer. And the way that 3D printing and additive manufacturing works is that the first step is to design something in a digital file, in a 3D file. So it's a 3D software. So in the same way that you have 2D programs, like, do you have PowerPoint here or Illustrator, where you wanna draw something? It's the same. If you draw something on paper, you only have 1 copy. But if you draw it on the computer, you can print it out over and over and over again. So, with 3D printing, you can make a 3D digital file of something, and then you can actually print out a physical object. So, the listeners, you can't see me, but I'm holding a 3-dimensional ball as an example of something that you can 3D print. And I'm also holding this 3D printed hand. It's actually a prosthetic hand. I'll tell you the story of this prosthetic hand. It's a really great story. And the story is that there was a man in South Africa injured himself in a shop accident and actually cut off the fingers of his hand. He wanted to get a prosthetic because he needed a prosthetic, but it was too expensive. He needed to create or make another alternative for himself. So he Googled and he found a puppet maker in another country, another place believe he was in D.C., and the puppet maker had made these big, giant puppet hands. And so the man asked him, could you, in a 3D file, design me a hand? And so they did. And then across the oceans, they collaborated via what's called the digital thread, and he 3D printed a hand. Because of this, there's a new organization that started called Enable, which is the Enable Community Foundation, which helps create new designs for these hands and helps to connect the designers, the volunteers who want to print the hands, and the people who need the hands.
How can women get empowered with 3D printing?
You know, the first thing is just to learn about the technology. So I think there's two different ways that I see that is help that 3D printing is helping to empower women. And the first is it's attracting girls in tech. So because it's fun. Okay, it's a fun new technology that people want to know about. So it gets more girls excited about science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. And getting girls excited about science, technology, engineering, math helps to empower them to be more women in technology. But then second, it helps for you to do your job better and in different ways. There's an organization in Nepal called Field Ready. And Field Ready is around putting and using localized manufacturing, especially in disaster relief zones. Right now, they're actually out in the field in Nepal. They're specifically working in the healthcare field to see what are some things that people need and how could they use 3D printing to shorten the supply chain. Because maybe they're in a very remote area and that remote area needs something and it might take 6 weeks, 2 months to get access to that technology. If you have a 3D printer, you immediately can print it right there. So I think that's also interesting.
I'm sure you've met a lot of women here in Nepal. What do you think about them?
I love you all. Seriously, I was just so blown away. First day I met with the U.S. ambassador here in Nepal, and that night she hosted a small event at her house, and you were there, and there was also the girls in tech. Over the course of the past 10 days, I've met lots of women. I've really met quite a number of incredibly passionate women, smart, lots of positive energy, and really excited to make an impact. One of the things that I've been encouraging the embassy and all the women that I've spoken to and communitaire is I think that there's a real need for the girls of Nepal to have more women mentors. They really want to see what you're doing. You inspire them so much.
Women mentors or women leadership, what do you think are the barriers in a country like Nepal?
Some of the similar challenges that we have in the U.S. even. Having opportunities, feeling comfortable to take those risks. You know, a lot of women said, you know, there's a fear of failure. You're afraid to fail. You want to do things right. And someone today said the most beautiful thing. He said, you know, in Nepal, we have hundred thousand problems, but that means we have 100,000 opportunities. And with each new opportunity comes a solution. And with each new solution comes an opportunity to innovate. And that's what makes us so rich in innovation. If something works, fantastic, but you always need to know how to make it work better. And if something didn't work, well, then you just try again. And also encourage things like public speaking and science and technology and engineering and fun, and do that at a very young age. I think the more you do that at a young age, the more you'll see the flourishing of women in technology. And I think that's the same for the U.S. as well.
Let's talk about you in your young age, or how did you get into this area? Tell us about your dream job, your childhood, and everything. Oh. We want to know more about
okay.
you.
Okay. You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I thought I would be a psychologist. And then when I went to college, I thought I would maybe work for the State Department, funny enough. When I graduated, I actually didn't know what to do. When I graduated from college, I thought, what am I going to do with my life? And then I thought, you know, how come I'm 22 years old, and when I remember being in high school, and nobody ever explained to me why I was learning anything I was learning in school. And I always thought, I always think, why am I learning this? But then when you get older, you start to realize and make those connections. So my initial career was really, I wanted to start an organization called Pathfinders that would connect students to mentors to help figure out, why am I learning this and what can I possibly do with my life? And that's how I started. And I started working in an organization called I Could Be. It was an online e-mentoring program connecting students to career mentors. And then I worked at the Girl Scouts of the USA, and I ran a national self-esteem program to help girls build self-esteem through exploration and the arts, and specifically through this idea of discovering a strong sense of self and what you're good at, telling your story, connecting with others, and then taking action to make the world a better place.
That sounds very interesting. For example, a listener of ours is listening to a conversation and he or she feels like, I have very low self-esteem. Tell us one trick so that he can boost his self-esteem.
I'm a very firm believer that each one of us, I really believe this with my whole heart, each one of us are bright lights. Each one of us have something unique that we offer the world. So I think about that. What do you like? What are your strengths? What are your talents? What are your values? Every single one of us has unique interests, unique strengths, unique talents. And I would say, write them down and take a look. And then appreciate them, because I think the first step to having a strong sense of self-esteem in many ways is knowing who you are and really appreciating and having gratitude and love for that person that you are. In the US, you know, at least when I was working on the self-esteem program, you know, there's a push by media to look a certain way or to be a certain way. There's this idea that we have to be this specific thing, that someone else has told us this idea of who we're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to be this idea of who we think we're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, and it can be painful. And I think that's what hurts us. And I think really what we need to do, a very good friend and mentor of mine taught me this, that you have to let go of the stories that other people tell you about who they think you should be. And you own the true story, that you are a bright light here to shine for the world.
Looking back, how tough was your process of being from a maker to a change maker?
I had a hard time. I struggled a lot. I struggled in college very, very much. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I was going to do in the world. I knew I wanted to do something. I knew I wanted to make a difference, but I had no idea how. I was scared. I didn't think I was smart enough. I didn't think I had the right experiences. And then when I went to graduate school, it was also very hard because there was a certain way of thinking that everybody else kind of had and subscribed to, this kind of traditional business thinking, and I just did not think like that. And I called myself the black sheep, and I was a black sheep, and it was scary. And I have to say, the biggest shift for me that helped me to move from maker to change maker was to find my other black sheep, to find the other people who thought like me, who had a vision like me. And that's why, and when I found those people, that's when my world started exploding with opportunity and excitement. It really was finding, I call it my tribe. It was about finding my tribe. And I think that's also why I love this idea of convening the women in technology and convening the tribe of women in tech, and why I love the idea of all calling all the makers and all the change makers and all the creators and the tinkers and the innovators to Kathmandu for the Maker Fair, because your tribe is there.
If you're thinking about making a big change, or if you are thinking about being a change maker, you have to find that tribe.
I'm a big believer in, you know, serendipity. There's a wonderful quote: when you follow your bliss, doors will open where once there were no doors. When you make a commitment, when you decide to do something that, you know, the universe conspires to help, you know, as you make those commitments and you find people who are doing similar things, you know, doors open and things do become, in a sense, easier.
Do you read books?
I do. Yes.
The recent one that you've read and you've really liked?
I can't remember the name, but I just was at the American Makerspace in Baidoa. And there was a book there. They had 3 copies of it, and I should have written down the name of it. But, you know, a book that I love is Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist. Have you read this book?
Yes.
It's fantastic. I love Paulo Coelho's The Alchemist. I think it's a really great story, and I think it's a good foundational story to what kind of we were just talking about of
yes, the universe and the conspiracies. Do you listen to music? Do you watch movies?
You know, I actually have a terrible memory, so I watch movies and then I forget.
Maybe you can remember your favorite song then.
Song is Me and My Bobby McGee by Janis Joplin. Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train. I was feeling near as faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. He drove us all the way to New Orleans. Yeah. But actually, there's another little girl. Okay, podcast world. Google this little girl. Her name is Grace Vanderwall.
Spelling?
V-A-N-D-E-R-W-A-A-L, I think. Or W-A-L-L, Grace Vanderwall. And she's 12. She was just on America's Got Talent. She is so awesome. She plays on a ukulele. She's awesome. And I will just tie that back to technology by telling you that you actually can 3D print a ukulele. A friend of mine, His wife plays the ukulele, actually, and he 3D printed a ukulele. My boss has a ukulele that's 3D printed, and you can 3D print a violin. You know, you could essentially, if it, again, you know, why 3D printing, for example, is cool, is, you know, you can make a bunch of instruments, and maybe in a place where you didn't have access maybe to buy a musical instrument, but you did have an access to a 3D printer in the internet, you can 3D print a ukulele, a violin, maybe even a flute, and make some music with, so it's the intersection of art and technology.
Back to 3D. 3D printing, when it was introduced to public, it was expected to revolutionize human existence. Stock prices for 3D printing companies, they have crashed. What happened to the whole revolution?
I think the revolution is still here, but it's just shifting. 3D printing started in the 80s. It actually was invented by a man named Charles Hull, Chuck Hull, in the 80s, and was in use for the automotive industry. And then around 2006, 2007, it really hit the kind of consumer scene. Patents for FDM expired. Kickstarter came around and access to capital happened and MakerBot came on the scene. And desktop 3D printers and the consumer 3D printing space really began to open up. You know, people got really excited about it, really, really excited. And there was a lot of hype. And there was a lot of conversation around having a 3D printer in every household. And we used to say it was not about just, will you have a 3D printer in your household, but what room in your house will you have the 3D printer in? I liken it to an exploding star. It really was an exploding star. But when a star gets so much energy and so much hype happens, and then the star explodes, but the star doesn't go away. You actually can see it for years and years and years and years and years and years after. So I think that, yes, you know, we definitely saw a lot of the hype of 3D printing, and stocks went incredibly high, and then kind of, I think, a little bit of reality kicked in. This technology is still an exponential and revolutionary technology. It's revolutionizing healthcare. It's revolutionizing aerospace. It's supporting localized manufacturing in new ways, and it's doing things that, you know, we won't even know.
And we are here in Kathmandu, the capital city of Nepal. You are complaining about the slow internet.
Yes.
And talking about the 3D and the revolution it has brought, I'm here thinking about our country, our internet system, the slow internet. How can we get benefit from the 3D?
I think the 3D printing has a few different ways of supporting Nepal. And one is through things like STEM education and helping to support your students with this idea of maker culture. I think entrepreneurs having access to this technology, there's lots of opportunities for entrepreneurs to use this technology. New product development, prototyping a new product, potentially creating a new product. And I think that there's opportunities too for slowly for businesses and for industry to integrate.
So when you go back to States, will you ever think about Nepal and how can you connect Nepal and 3D printing system?
Oh, I am invested in Nepal. You know, as I mentioned, I came here because of Communitaire, and invested in Communitaire will grow and thrive. Certainly, yes. I mean, I think that I will continue to try to support the work that Communitaire is doing. I'd like to keep track to know who comes to the Maker Fair, what they make, and how they might use, or how they have used or might use 3D printing. I've been working with the U.S. Embassy in Nepal to think about how to bring more 3D printing technology to the different American spaces. So, for example, we talked about bringing kind of the do-it-yourself, build your own 3D printer kit. There's a technology called Filibot, where you can actually collect plastic trash and turn that plastic trash into filament, so you can actually make your own filament from trash. There's a pen called the 3D Doodler. So yes, I'm invested in this country, invested in the maker movement and in 3D printing in Nepal, and very excited and curious.
So it seems like the star is here in Nepal and it is all set to shine.
I love it. The star is here in Nepal and it is already shining.
So if anyone would like to follow you on Twitter, or are you on Facebook, how to keep track of you and activities?
Yes, I'm relatively new to Twitter, but you can follow me on Leanne Gluck, LeanneGluck. And if you tweet at me, and enough people tweet at me, I will certainly start being on Twitter more.
Are you on Facebook?
I am on Facebook, Leanne Gluck, on Facebook as well.
So when you go back, the last question before you leave Nepal for US, what do you think you'll be taking with you, and what have we achieved?
Well, I'm taking a Buddha. I'm taking pillowcases. No, I'm taking some of the creative culture of Nepal. I'm taking a lot of amazing connections and quite a few of the women that I've met here in Nepal who are now, I think, my new friends. I'm taking the experiences that I've had here. I'm really taking a solidified commitment to helping to continue to support, especially Communitaire and the work that the U.S. Embassy is doing and the work that you're doing. And in terms of what you've achieved, I mean, the American Embassy has achieved a lot, Nepal Communitaire has achieved a lot, and I can't wait to see, like I said, what happens at this Maker Faire in September. I am so excited to kind of find out through social media.
Are you coming back?
I'm not, so I'll have to find out only through social media to see what's been created and made. But I definitely walk away here feeling a little bit more, just a little bit, because I've only been here 10 days, but a little bit more of an understanding of the culture and the people and you know, the opportunities here, and I'm just looking forward to continuing the conversation.
And you have to come back for the trekking too.
Yes, I have to come back for the trekking. I have to work out and get in shape first for the trekking, but yes, I have to come back for the trekking.
Tell me the person that you love the most.
Probably my dad and my sister.
Oh, yes. Any message that you'd like to give to them?
I love you, family. Thank you for making me who I am, and it was because of your and my mom. Because of your, you know, open-minded spirit and your empathetic nature and your creativity, idealism, you helped me become who I am today.
Any special guy in your life?
Bear. Hi, Bear! He's definitely keeping track of my journeys in Nepal.
Thank you so much. Well, you love your family so much and a guy too, and we love you for this positive spirit. And thank you so much, Leanne.
Thank you so much.